And we are back on Vox Pop. Good afternoon. I'm Bob Barrett on Medical Monday in for Alan Shartok. And joining us today to discuss neurological issues, specifically the treatment and surgical interventions for epilepsy, are doctors Matthew Adamo and Timothy Lynch of Albany Medical Center. Dr. Matthew Adamo specializes in general and pediatric neurosurgery, including surgical treatment for epilepsy, brain and spinal cord tumors, traumatic brain and spinal cord injuries, and congenital and developmental abnormalities such as spina bifida. A graduate of SUNY Upstate Medical University in Syracuse, New York, he's highly skilled in the use of the most advanced state-of-the-art technology available for treating these conditions and for utilizing techniques such as neuroendoscopy and neuronavigation for various neurosurgical procedures. Dr. Adamo, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Timothy Lynch has advanced training in epilepsy and extensive experience in electroencephalography, the measuring of electrical activity produced by the brain. As part of a multidisciplinary team, Dr. Lynch and his colleagues are continuously researching new and innovative therapies to treat epilepsy. He's a graduate of Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, where he also completed his internship in internal medicine. Dr. Lynch, welcome.
Thank you.
And a reminder that Albany Medical Center is a Level 4 designated epilepsy center, the highest designation offered by the National Association of Epilepsy Centers, meaning they have the highest level of surgical and treatment options for patients with epilepsy. If you'd like to get in on the conversation here on Vox Pop, the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page. That's at facebook.com/WAMC Radio or tweet us. That's at WAMC Vox Pop. With all those options, get in on the conversation right now. Doctors, let's start just basically talking about epilepsy because it really has been so misunderstood over the years. Just what is epilepsy? What does someone have to come to you and you see and you say, well, this is obviously epilepsy?
It actually depends. A lot of people come to us because they're not even sure they have epilepsy. I think most people are familiar with what they see on TV and movies, what I call the Hollywood seizures, which are generalized tonic-clonic seizures or grand mal seizures. This is when the patient falls to the ground, has generalized stiffening, shaking, may bite their tongue, lose urine. But that's really what happens when a seizure is taken over their entire brain. Some patients have generalized epilepsies where the seizure just starts over their entire brain. Most adults, in fact, have partial epilepsies. Where the seizure starts in one part of their brain and like a fire may smolder there or it may spread. And the type of seizure they have depends on where in the brain it starts and how it spreads. So, for example, if a seizure starts along the motor strip on the right side of their brain, they may have movement on the left side of their body, like focal jerking of the left arm, for example. If they have a seizure that starts in the left side of their visual or their left visual cortex, they may see things out of the right visual field. So where it starts, what may give them symptoms, and then how it spreads may change those symptoms. But all of them have in common that they have this very abnormal hypersynchronous rhythm in their brain that results in these various symptoms that can be different from person to person.
If you have one of these small seizures, something, you know, not the Hollywood seizure, as you put it, how, is that something that someone could take a look and say, look, someone's having a small seizure? Or would it just pass somebody by?
A lot of times it passes by and they don't present until that eventually spreads to the rest of the brain. They have a grand mal seizure. So a lot of people actually present and they say, I had my first seizure last night, and it was a grand mal seizure. And actually, when you ask them further questions about maybe seeing things or maybe having difficulty speaking for a period of time, you realize, no, in fact, they've had many small seizures for years. It's just that it has gone unrecognized. And that makes a big deal about treatment because we treat people who've had multiple seizures. So if you don't ask the right questions, you may think they've only had one seizure and you don't treat when in reality they've had years of small ones.
Will a small seizure eventually become a big one?
Typically, if untreated. So if someone either has good insight to themselves or has a good primary care physician that can recognize early on that this may be a small seizure, if they're appropriately treated, they may never, ever have a big seizure. But usually, if someone is unrecognized and untreated, ultimately their seizure will become more frequent, longer lasting, more severe.
And how long is the the smoldering process, so to speak? If one starts, how long does it take before? I mean, and I'm sure there's no pat answer for that.
But. Right. There's always exceptions to everything, right? But typically, if someone has a small seizure, what we'd call a simple partial seizure, because they're awake, they're alert, they know what's going on, that could be anywhere from a matter of 5 to 20 seconds to many minutes before it may spread. Other people spread so fast that you think they have a generalized epilepsy. You think their whole brain becomes engulfed in this abnormal rhythm immediately. But it's just that the spread is so quickly, you can't discern that. And it really takes an EEG many times to discern the difference.
This isn't something where, you know, you might start on Tuesday and it's going to smolder for a week.
No, this is something usually they'll have an event, and then 3 months later they'll have another, then 2 weeks later they'll have another. But other times someone can have their very first seizure truly is a grand mal seizure. Mm-hmm. It just depends.
1-800-348-2551. That's the number to call if you want to get on the conversation on Medical Monday. We're talking about epilepsy. So what about treatment? When you say treatment, we've talked about surgical treatment for epilepsy. What kind of decision is that?
Yeah, I'll start out because the medical treatment is always the first trial.
Okay.
So if someone has seizures or epilepsy, then you try medication. What medication you choose is probably not worth getting into now, but there's many medications, and each patient obviously is different. You pick a medication. If it works, great, you're done. You know, they're not having any more seizures. If they continue to have seizures, you go up on the dose, you see how they feel. If that doesn't work, you try a second seizure medication. And about two-thirds of all comers with seizures can be completely treated, meaning no seizures with medications alone. If they fail two medications or more, obviously, then they're what we call medically refractory. And in those patients, we bring them in and we monitor them, number one, to make sure they're in fact having seizures as opposed to something else, and two, to see if they'd be open for a surgical treatment.
Right, and for a surgical treatment, there's kind of two ways to do it. One is to do craniotomy, actually do a brain operation, remove a portion of the brain that's causing the seizures. And that's typically reserved for patients who have a very localized, a very focal finding on an EEG, maybe abnormality on an MRI scan or a CT scan, where we would then be sure that's a safe place to take, and then we remove that portion of the brain. Other patients have a generalized epilepsy that wouldn't really respond to any kind of open brain operation, and we do what's called a vagal nerve stimulator, which is like a pacemaker, kind of, that alters the brain's electrical patterns to help prevent generalizing of a seizure. And different patients kind of fall into those different categories based on their type of seizure, the safety of taking them to the OR based on where the seizure is located on an EEG. So there's a lot of decisions that have to be made to go on either pathway.
All right. 1-800-348-2551. It's Medical Monday. We're talking about epilepsy, and let's get to the phones now, start to take your calls. We're going to start with Greg in Saratoga Springs. Greg, good afternoon.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, you're on.
Hi. Yes, I had a question. Thank you. I had a question on false seizures or pseudo seizures. I have a son who had his first seizure when he was about 3 years old, and then didn't have one for about 5 years, and then had them, periodically over the years. And we brought him down to the Albany Med one time, and saw an epileptologist there who said unequivocally he did not have epilepsy, but he had a grand mal seizure several days after that visit. So I guess I've boiled out of this that there's some kind of seizures that are not epileptic in origin, but are nevertheless grand mal in presentation. And with my son, he does have anxiety, and he had delay in talking and fears and, sort of autism type or psychological issues, although he swears as an adult that he has neurological issues and not psychological issues. So we're sort of very confused over all this terminology.
That's actually something we see a lot of, and this one question could probably take the entire show. But very briefly, when I was talking earlier about one of the things that all the seizures have in common is this abnormal brain rhythm. Patients who have pseudo seizures or non-epileptic events or non-epileptic behavioral events, there's a million terms for these, but basically events that look like seizures. They look like a grand mal, or they look like they're staring and unresponsive, or they look like they're focal jerking, anything that looks like an epileptic seizure. But in fact, their brain waves are completely normal during the entire time. Those patients are diagnosed with pseudo seizures, non-epileptic events, whatever you want to call them. Now, they're very...
Well, my son does have abnormal brain waves in the temporal lobe, though.
And you can have both. There are a percentage of people who have both epileptic seizures and non-epileptic seizures. And the key there is to differentiate so the patient, or if not the patient, the patient's caregivers or family, friends, can understand which is which. And that's where a really in-depth history of what happens when you have this type of event versus that type of event. These patients typically are brought in for monitoring and have continuous video EEG to capture the events, which probably sounds like what you alluded to there with that capture. But again, people can have two different events. People can have both pseudo-seizures and epileptic seizures, and that's very important to tell the difference between the two. Because they have two different... Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, why? Because, I mean, a seizure is a seizure to me. I mean, I don't care what the difference is. I just want to get some treatment. So why are you saying is it important?
Because the treatment is different. So ultimately, we just want them to stop. So if they're epileptic seizures, they need epileptic medication. Again, there's many of them out there. And if you can control those with epileptic medications, you know, that takes care of that spell. But if he's also having psychological seizures, pseudo-seizures, stress seizures, again, there's a million names for them, that has to be treated in a different way. And that's treated either through a psychiatrist if there's an anxiety component to it, or a psychologist if there's a behavioral component to it, sometimes both. So the reason it matters is the treatments are very different. And if you want to stop two different things, you will need two different treatments.
Okay. Thanks so much for your call, Greg. We appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. We're just getting started. We'll be back with more of your calls right after this quick break. Support for WAMC comes from American Meditation Institute, Averill Park, New York, offering meditation classes for beginners working to reduce stress and enhance their health. AmericanMeditation.org. Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, for Easter lilies, primrose, hyacinth, orchids, herbs, daffodils, or tropical houseplants. Spring open house with education seminars. WardsNursery.com. And Veterinary Emergency and Specialty Hospital, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, providing ophthalmology, surgery, and internal medicine services for dogs and cats, now offering laser eye surgery. VESHDeerfield.com. Okay, we are back on Medical Monday, 1-800-348-2551. That's the number of the call. Our subject today is epilepsy, and our guests are Dr. Matthew Adamo and Dr. Timothy Lynch, both of Albany Medical Center. And if you have questions about epilepsy, 1-800-348-2551 is the number to call. Let's get right back to your calls now. We're going to go to Shirley in Amherst. Shirley, good afternoon.
Yes, I wanted to say that aluminum destroys our nervous system, and Dr. probably already knows that, but when people are drinking carbonated beverages in aluminum cans, the carbonated beverages take aluminum out of the can. They also take plastic out of the bottles and put it in people's bloodstream. And aluminum goes in the bloodstream and then goes through the brain, and it's destructive to people's nervous system. And there's aluminum in some brands of salt. There used to be aluminum in Big Y brand, but I called the CEO years ago, and they took it out some years ago. So the table salt, it doesn't have aluminum, but some brands do, and people need to avoid those. And
Well, Shirley, let's see what the doctor has to say about this. Is aluminum in the bloodstream a problem with epilepsy?
As far as I know, we haven't really seen any problems with that. And again, you know, there's always there's that great line, you know, what's the difference between a drug and a toxin? And it's the dose. So I'm sure if you give enough aluminum to someone, certainly, yeah, you can cause significant injury to them. As far as I know, there's not any data or studies saying that aluminum from carbonated beverages, for example, worsen or give you a risk factor for epilepsy.
Shirley, thank you for your call. We appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. We're going to Laura in Fort Plain. Laura, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having this show.
Sure.
In fifth grade, I was traditionally a good student. My parents started accusing me of not paying attention, and so did my fifth grade teacher. And finally, my mother took me to the doctor, and which I was greatly resentful about. And he says, count to 10. And I did. And my mother stood there with her mouth open. And I evidently went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 and just sat there and then finished 8, 9, 10. And I didn't know anything had happened. So the doctor must have had an idea what it was, and he did diagnose me with epilepsy. Now, how normal is that to just suddenly in fifth grade get epilepsy?
It's pretty typical. What it sounds like you're describing are absence seizures, which are a type of generalized seizures. It's not focal. It doesn't affect one part of your brain. It is the whole brain at once, at least diffusely, and you just have a sudden behavioral arrest, staring, sometimes blinking. Usually the person has no idea that it's occurring.
Right.
And that is a typical age group. It maybe starts a little younger, typically, 7, 8 sort of thing, but you can start it at 12.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because somebody told me later, oh, no, you have to either be born with it or have a head injury or something.
Nope, not at all.
Okay. And I only, as I remember, took drugs for, I don't know how long, maybe a couple of years, and it went away. Can there be any lingering effects if I have days I feel like I'm not paying attention? Can I blame it on that, or is it just gone?
That's a great question. Typically, absence epilepsy is one of the few that people outgrow. But people often ask, can I outgrow my seizures? Can I outgrow my seizures? Typically not, but absence epilepsy is one that typically people do outgrow. There's always that question of people who have had epilepsy or have epilepsy when they're staring or not concentrating. Are they having small seizures or are they just daydreaming like anyone else does? Typically, if nothing else is going on, it's typically you're just kind of lost in thought. The only way to really know for sure is to hook you up to EEGs and record and see what happens during one of those spells. But typically you outgrow those.
All right. Thank
okay.
you so much.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Linda. 1-800-348-2551. That's the number to call. Let's go to Christy in Glens Falls. Christy, good afternoon.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
My question is, my daughter, she had a seizure at 8 years old, just out of the blue, grand mal seizure. Was medicated for 4 years, and then was on Depakote, which was an absolute nightmare. Then we switched to Zonegran, which was, a little bit better, but cognitively she lost a lot. She really couldn't read. We just went through, a lot with that. And then we were able to transition her off medication. She had a clean EEG. 4 years, she was not medicated. She gained some of the, some of that reading comprehension back, but still her processing is slow, and she continues to have a 504. She does very well in school, but she needs additional processing time. Again, evaluating to have her drive, she had to have an EEG to be cleared. There was some activity that showed up on the EEG. And she went on medication. She went on Keppra, not the XR initially, but then 3 months into the Keppra, she had a tonic-clonic. And
Mary, we're gonna have to get to a question soon. What would you like to know?
Well, the question could the medication be causal in this case? Because basically, I mean, we love our neurologist, but just in terms of, you try this, you try that, it's such a frustrating disease. Is there something else that we should be doing or could be doing to, it's very frustrating. I have a 16-year-old who wants to drive
What are you worried about the cause of? Is Keppra causing what? Or is a seizure medication causing what? Causing the seizure or
Could be causing a seizure because she didn't have a grand mal seizure in 4 years. We thought she was fine. Then goes on medication, and then she has actually not one, but two.
Yeah, that's always a strange question. Not a strange question, it's a good question. It's always a tough question to answer for someone who hasn't been having seizures and then they go on to medication and now they do have seizures. It would be extraordinarily unlikely that Keppra brought out the seizure. It sounds like she was already having epileptiform, that's an assumption, but like you said, something on the EEG that they wanted to put her back on medication. So it sounds like it was probably coincidence that it occurred on Keppra. Those medications really should not induce or bring out a seizure. But like anything, and I'll say this time and time and time again, if someone is having seizures and medications are not stopping them, then the next thing you need really to do is have video EEG monitoring and capture the seizures and see what type of seizures they're, for example, your daughter's having, and to see what might be the best treatment. It might be a different type of medication. It may be a surgical intervention. But that would be the next step. If a couple of medications haven't done it, then you have to kind of dig further.
Mm-hmm. But, well, I mean, but the other class of medications is cognitively not an option. I mean, she became,
right.
I don't want to say non-functional, but people would ask if she was, like, there.
Right, no.
She was basically I don't want to say a dead kid, but
No. Often the older medications and Depakote certainly can make one feel like they're a zombie, but there are other still many more medications that will make people feel virtually normal, like they're not even on a medication. And sometimes it is a matter of trial and error to find that.
Yeah, well, yeah, Lamictal was also a scary one for us. I mean, just horrible.
Trial and error is the way to go, I guess.
It is, unfortunately, and further studies.
Okay, Mary, thank you for your call. Appreciate it.
Okay.
1-800-348-2551. That's the number to call to get in on a discussion on Medical Monday here on Vox Pop. And, all right, well, I don't think we have any calls right now. So let's talk about treatment for just a bit, because I'd love to get, Dr. Adama, I'd love to get you into this conversation here. But what is new? What is, like, on the horizon for treatment of epilepsy?
I mean, you know, it's still a matter of medical treatment versus surgical treatment. And as we get more technologically advanced, we can do more kind of tailored, smaller operations to achieve better outcomes, you know, less aggressive kind of resections of the brain, the abnormal tissue itself. You know, a lot of the current technology that's helping us out is we have much better imaging capabilities, so much better MRI scans, high-resolution scans, you know, different kind of nuclear medicine scans, to help us localize very subtle abnormalities in the brain and also localize areas where there is different metabolism occurring before and after a seizure. So all that data certainly makes it more reasonable and easier for us to kind of decide, you know, where's the place that we can look for the seizure based on the MRI or MRI data. And then that information can actually be used in the OR with what's called neuronavigation, where we can actually link our instruments in the OR with MRI scans and in real time, on the image at least, see where our pointer is on the person's brain, how that corresponds to the MRI scan. Now, the MRI doesn't change as we're doing the operation. It's the original preoperative image, but our ability to plan trajectories and plan very focal areas to look at has increased tremendously over the last, you know, 20 years due to this much improved technology.
When you're doing the mapping, when you're doing the original picture there, does that have to be done during a seizure?
So no, the best pictures we get are when people are completely still. We get these very high-resolution MRI scans on our 3T magnet. And we can see very, very, very nice detail. But aside from that, as far as the technology we use in the OR, and Dr. Lynch can discuss this as well, we place basically EEGs on the brain surface. And these, they're called grids, and it's just an array of electrodes that we put on the brain surface. And we cover certain areas for certain operations to help us, one, localize the seizure focus, see where it's actually coming from, and then see where that focus is in relation to important parts of the brain, such as speech, language areas, motor area. Hmm. So then we can know for sure, is this a safe area we can actually go after with an operation or not?
1-800-348-2551. Let's get back to some calls now. We have Mary in Pittsfield. Mary, good afternoon.
Yes, hello. I'm on Keppra now for seizures, and my doctors are talking to me about seizures caused by silent migraines. And to say the least, I'm a little confused about what that all means. It's been explained to me, of course, but I have had episodes where I've lost the ability to speak. You know, my face has felt like it's melting. Yet they're saying it's not epilepsy, but you're having seizures due to silent migraines, maybe. Could you explain that a little bit to me?
Yeah, that's not the best of terminology, I would say. So at the beginning of the show when I was saying how seizures can look like many different things depending on where it starts in the brain and how it spreads, migraines and seizures can clinically look very similar. So, for example, if someone is having difficulty speaking because that language area of the brain is not working properly, if it's due to seizure activity, obviously you treat it as seizure and give seizure medication. But the exact same clinical complaint, that difficulty speaking, could be due to a migraine, for that matter. It could be due to a TIA or a stroke. So many different things can look very similarly. If they're saying that you are not having seizures, and that would mean that you are not having this abnormal hypersynchronous activity in your brain, and that it's due to a migraine. So, for example, if you're having a time where, boy, for 20 minutes, I really have trouble getting my words out, or 10 minutes, I fumble my speech. In fact, there was a great video on a YouTube once where I think a reporter was having a migraine and she just could not speak. But same thing. It's you have to treat the underlying problem. Keppra is a good seizure medication. It does nothing for headaches or migraine. Migraine is. And a lot of people are still trying to figure out exactly what migraine is, but conceptually one can almost think of it as the opposite of a seizure. A seizure is this hyperactive area of the brain. Mm-hmm. And a migraine, the term people will use now is spreading cortical depression, where actually everything kind of slows down in the area that the migraine is affected. But if they're saying they're having migraines, but then still calling them seizures, that's extraordinarily confusing and makes no sense.
And they actually,
it's one or the other.
Well, they actually also thought, I had a major episode in 2010, and they said it started as a seizure, but the second part of it was a TIA, and that's even more extraordinarily confusing.
Yeah, no, that doesn't really make sense either. Now, a lot of people can have migraines after a seizure. So someone has a typical epileptic seizure, and then they have a horrendous headache afterwards that is really migrainous in nature. But really, we just say they have a bad headache after a seizure, and it's a seizure disorder, not a migraine disorder.
Right. Well, I had never heard of silent migraines, you know, a painless
migraine. Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, it's very confusing, but thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. 1-800-348-2551. Mark is in Ballston Spa. Mark, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Wondering if you could give me a little bit of an idea of what the treatment in the hospital for the diagnosis that you spoke about entails. It seems as though I'm about to enter the hospital a week from, well, it'll be the first of the month. I have a GBM that I've had for going on 4 years now, which is, I suppose, an extraordinarily good result. If you're familiar with that, I imagine.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. So I started having seizures probably a year and a half ago, and the first one was a grand mal where I was alone, and I was out for, I don't know, well over an hour by the time I really realized where I was again. Since then, I think I've had a, I guess it would be a partial one where I lost the ability to read and the ability to speak, but I was conscious and could move around. And a month or so after that, I had another grand mal where I was just out. And when I was revived, it was in the presence of a bunch of medical emergency people. And then just last week, I had a fourth one. So obviously, I'm not driving, and my life is pretty well inconvenienced. My doctor, who is an Albany Med, wants me to come into your unit there, which, you know, I trust her implicitly. She's given me great care, but I suppose the picture for me of the sketch of what is laying before me is a little bit blank. So I know I have to go in, stay in one room, be wired up, but beyond that, I really don't know what's going to happen. You know, I'm a little fearful of it. Could you tell me?
So typically, there's two reasons we bring someone into a monitoring unit. One is to characterize what someone's having. You know, is it even again, is it epilepsy? Is it something else? Or if it is epilepsy, what type is it? You know, with a history of a GBM, we would, you know, think you would have a partial epilepsy, and it could obviously have various degrees of generalization. The other option or reason is for localization, where we want to get a better idea of. We know, you know, for example, we know it's epilepsy. We know it's partial, but where exactly is it starting from? Because that may be the first step towards a surgical treatment. Typically, coming into the monitoring unit, simply put, you would come in. Medications are usually weaned off over a matter of a day or two or three, and it's a kind of a sitting game and waiting to see what happens when you have a seizure and record with EEGs on your head the whole time.
strictly on the head, not on the rest of the body?
Other than an EKG, yeah, it's strictly on the head.
Okay. All
okay.
Right.
Hey, Mark, good luck. We thank you for your call.
Thanks so much.
All right. 1-800-348-2551. Linda is in Saratoga. Linda, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Okay. How are you?
Good, thank you. I've been in the field, MRDD, for 30 years, so I've seen a lot of individuals who've had seizures and seen them have seizures, whether they have a diagnosis of epilepsy or not. But my question is, if somebody has a seizure and they're treated, I mean, if somebody has a seizure disorder and they've been treated with anticonvulsant medication that has worked in terms of minimizing seizures to maybe 2 to 3 times a month, do those few seizures on the medication cause further brain damage to the focus area of the seizure?
That's an extraordinarily difficult question to ask. You know, how many, you know, can seizures cause brain damage? Typically, a seizure won't cause a brain damage. Recurrent seizures over time can affect people's cognitive abilities. People have done serial neuropsychiatric examinations, especially in kids, where they'll get a kind of a baseline IQ, for lack of a better term, and then a year or 2 years later, see how they're doing again. And they can show how cognitively they actually have declined with active seizures. The question is, but there are others who have no decline whatsoever. The question is, what type of seizures, how often they're happening, how long they are, how intense they are. There's a lot that goes into it. It can occur. Again, usually more in children than adults. Adults tend to be pretty stable. But we've seen changes as well, which is why we're always so aggressive at treating it, because it's not just treating these independent events. It can be affecting the brain over the long term. But no one really knows how many is too many.
Okay.
Okay, I understand. Yeah.
Okay, Linda,
thank you very much.
Thank you for your call, Linda. We appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. It's Medical Monday. We have more calls coming. We still need a few more. Get it on to action. We'll be back right after this. Support for WAMC comes from Anderson Center for Autism, Statsburg, New York, helping to educate the public on New York State's new autism insurance legislation, AndersonCares.org. Identity Eyewear, Albany, women-owned and operated with a combined 70 years experience, eye exams by appointment, 518-459-2638. And The Bar Devant, presenting David Sedaris April 5th, the Hudson Valley Philharmonic's A Little Harp Music April 6th, Kathy Griffin April 21st, and Lewis Black April 28th. Bardevant.org. And we are back on Vox Pop. 1-800-348-2551 is the number to call. Our guest today, Drs. Matthew Adamo and Timothy Lynch of Albany Medical Center. We're talking about epilepsy. And, of course, you can get in on the conversation not only on the phone but by the web. From Facebook, Eileen asked this question, doctors. What alternative treatments are there for partial complex seizures when surgery is not an option? Decades of medication, continued seizures are a concern, especially with regard to long-term effects.
Well, without knowing all the details, I think it depends what surgery was offered, but if the patient's not a candidate for receptive surgery, then vagal nerve stimulation may be a very good option. It's much less invasive, and it does work well for various kinds of epilepsy, partial complex, you know, generalized kind of, it can run kind of the gamut. Mm-hmm. So it's a very good alternative when open surgical resection has been ruled out as a possibility.
Okay, repeat that. What kind of stimulation was that?
Vagal nerve stimulation.
Vagal nerve stimulation, okay. Mm-hmm. 1-800-348-2551. And who's on the phone? Johanna is in New Paltz. Johanna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. I don't really know a word, a term for this, but I have had for over 20 years something that is like a seizure. My question is, it seems to come from the neck vertebra, and particularly on the right side. It is very sudden in onset. It is absolutely horrendous. It's like a spinning vertigo. And I contacted a neurologist who went into the ear, middle ear situation, and said they want to know that. I have kyphosis. I'm 85. I can't lie down on my back, and the result is very difficult examination procedures. I need an eye procedure, and it was actually in the operating theater where they very kindly tried to put me down in some way. Everything went well until, once again, I tried to sit up, and I had this seizure, for want of a better term, I don't know. And I started screaming and yelling, and I have the feeling that I clutch everything that I can to hold on. I don't know where I am. I don't know who I am. I can't stop. And this time I had the feeling that we all were racing into a blue wall. It is indescribably horrible.
Okay. Doctors, is this something
just,
you've
just
heard?
One second, please.
Okay,
just
well, we okay,
time.
Go ahead.
This time, in the left arm was something that I couldn't stop. And now I'm afraid, can I cause a stroke? Or have you heard and do you accept the possibility that something like this comes from the neck vertebra? Thank you.
I think one thing to consider if you have bad kyphosis, you may have underlying arthritis and disc disease.
Yes.
It may be a compression of nerves that go to the arms or a compression of the spinal cord itself, but also sometimes you may have some blood vessel type problems.
Yes.
The arteries that go through the spine, they can give you sensations of dizziness and vertigo if there's a blockage there, if there's, you know, occasionally a different position may cause a partial block in the vessel. So one thing to consider is some vascular workup to be sure you don't have any kind of poor blood flow. And also, if you haven't had MRI scans or CAT scans of your neck, to look for any kind of...
Well, they can't do anything because I can't lie down. And I can't lie down because the neck is so bent. There's such a kink in it, and the back is so bent that it's just impossible. I can't get under the machine.
Right. There are some places locally that do upright MRI scans. That you can actually sit in a chair and get the MRI scan, or even semi-reclined. So those might be options, if you haven't had good imaging, to try to get to one of those places that does the sitting MRI scan to accommodate your neck position better.
Now, do you accept that the Adrachwinkel, which is the German term, and that they come from the neck vertebrae?
Pain can certainly come from neck vertebrae, nerve type pain, musculoskeletal pain, sure.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your call, 1-800-348-2551. We're going to go to Kate in Pittsfield. Kate, good afternoon.
Hi there. Well, my question is about meds, epilepsy meds causing birth defects like Down syndrome. Is that possible?
I mean, there are some medications that can cause certain anomalies, but as far as I know, nothing is known to specifically cause Down syndrome. It's a chromosomal anomaly where you have a trisomy. But no medications that I'm aware of actually would cause that to happen. Do you think
okay.
different than that?
Thank you.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for your call. 1-800-348-2551. Megan is in New Hampton. Megan, good afternoon.
Hi. I'm calling. I was diagnosed at age 21 with seizures, grand mal seizures in my sleep. Never got an answer as to why. I was just kind of told this is the way you are. Take your medicines and try to live a healthy life. I wanted to ask about controlling seizures through diet, such as gluten-free diets. Do you have any thoughts on that?
So just to touch really quickly on the you were not told why, that is actually very common because a lot of times we can't figure out why. And I would just say, the good news is, it's not a tumor, right? So that's very common. As far as diet, there are primarily when people talk about diet for seizure control, people talk about the ketogenic diet, which is like the Atkins diet times 1,000. Such that, dinner is mayonnaise and pads of butter. It's very difficult. And usually we tell people, it's usually in kids. Although a lot of research has really now being done on a modified Atkins diet. Now, are your seizures controlled with your medications?
Yeah, I take Trileptal. The longest I've gone seizure-free is a little over 2 years, and it's only when I miss a dose that
That's great. And not knowing you or anything about you, obviously, I would stick with medications. They're just, it's just,
okay.
They're better studied. You know, might be possible in the future that we can figure out the diet, but I think at this point it's not as well studied, it's not as well known, and therefore less predictable. And when we want you out driving, we want predictability.
Okay.
And one other question. Do you support breastfeeding while taking medication like Shiloh?
Oh, yeah. Many people breastfeed, no problem.
Yep. Okay. Yep.
Okay. Right. Thanks, Megan.
Great. Thanks.
All right, 1-800-348-2551 from Facebook. Lynn on Facebook wants to know if you could differentiate between seizures that occur when a child has a fever from epilepsy.
I mean, basically, the ones that occur during a fever can look just like a typical epileptic type seizure. And we do know that, you know, if kids have repeated febrile seizures or a severe febrile seizure, that can increase their risk of epilepsy later on in life. But most febrile seizures, the typical non-complicated short-term one the child recovers from, has very little bearing on future epilepsy. But we do also know that when children have complicated febrile seizures that last like 15 minutes or so, or repeated febrile seizures, there is a risk of injuring the brain and ending up with epilepsy later in life.
So just one with a bad fever, you're probably in,
right. Most
you're okay.
Most pediatricians don't worry about like a typical high fever, a child has a seizure, and the child recovers. They worry more if it's a complicated, longer seizure that doesn't resolve before the EMS gets there or the child requires medications to break the seizure.
Right. Even multiple febrile seizures don't really carry a significant risk for increased epilepsy later.
All right. Where are we going now? We're going to go to Valencia and talk to Sage. Sage, good afternoon. Hello,
Hi,
Sage.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm calling, I guess, on behalf of my husband, who has had epilepsy for about 10 years, started out with two grand mal seizures. They put him on Keppra, and then 10 years later, he went fine without having any seizure until last year, had another grand mal seizure in his sleep, which actually ended up requiring extensive back surgery. They switched his medication to Dilantin, but we actually live in a state where medical marijuana is approved, so they also had sort of suggested that. So I guess my question is, he takes a Dilantin, he occasionally smokes. I'm kind of curious how medical marijuana plays a part in, I guess, the treatment or the prevention of epilepsy. And just trying to understand, is it an issue if he goes a week without using the marijuana, since he has sort of been using it kind of regularly? I hope that all makes sense.
It does. I think, talk about topics that could take an entire show. I think extraordinarily little is known about marijuana and epilepsy. There has been some research, actually, looking to see if it is anti-epileptic. Unfortunately, the research at this level is literally on slices of rat brain in a laboratory. I do have patients who do smoke marijuana. And I personally have not seen any benefit nor harm from it. Obviously, in New York, it's illegal. So I don't think enough is known as to your question as to a withdrawal. Again, I don't think anyone really knows from any studies or whatnot. But I would be surprised to see a problem if you stopped smoking for a week. Whereas stopping medications for a week would be disastrous.
Right. That makes sense.
Yep.
That makes sense. Yeah, I guess that kind of came out because when he had the grand mal seizure last year, he typically wasn't a big drinker, but that month he actually ended up drinking at two different times more than he usually does. So they sort of advised him not to drink alcohol, and he's gone an entire year without drinking any alcohol. And I guess that's what made me a little worried about the marijuana situation. If he decides to not be regular about that, was that an issue?
Right. And the other thing that people often forget when someone has a lot of alcohol and they have a seizure, is especially if they have a history of epilepsy, is that they also happen to be up all night drinking alcohol. And it might even be the sleep deprivation that was a bigger role in that.
Okay. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. Grace is in Sheffield, Massachusetts. Grace, good afternoon.
Hi. I'm really calling because you seem to be neurologist. I had an abscess tooth in December that crashed in Monday, and by evening I was a lot sicker than I realized. And during the night I didn't drink enough water, and by the third time I got up, the world went black. I mean, blacker than the blackest paint you've ever seen. And then in the middle of it was this ring of fire, not a circle, but a ring. about like 6 or 7 inches in diameter. And then after that, I passed out and eventually crawled to the bathroom and got some water. But what happened in the brain? I mean, I don't think it was something I saw. I think it was something that happened in the brain.
What you describe more sounds like a fainting spell, or as we'll say syncope.
Yeah.
Someone who's extraordinarily dehydrated, like you describe,
right.
Their blood pressure would be lower. And then frequently, as we hear this frequently, as someone gets up to go to the bathroom,
yeah.
They lose all their vision and then they drop to the floor. The ring of fire, I think, is pretty nonspecific. I wouldn't, whether you saw that or something else, it doesn't really make me think of anything concerning or special. But I think what you describe sounds more like a syncopal event or a faint from dehydration and illness. And does not sound like a seizure to me.
No, it wasn't a seizure, but I mean, like, what happens in the brain? It just sort of goes flat?
Yeah, actually, when someone passes out, that's exactly what happens. The blood flow doesn't get to the brain, and if you look at an EEG, the EEG goes flat.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Yeah.
We appreciate it. Hydrate.
Thank you.
1-800-348-2551. Merle is in Argyle. Merle, good afternoon.
Hi. I have a real quick, simple question. I've always been under the conception that epilepsy was always caused by brain injury. Am I wrong?
So that, there,
it sounds like I am.
Yeah, there can be various causes. Some of them are congenital. There can be some anomalies, how the brain is kind of formed on a microscopic or the gross level. There can be a brain tumor or some vascular malformation. And it can also be a consequence of a brain injury. So that there really are various reasons that any one person could have epilepsy or seizures.
Oh, okay. So there is multiple different sources.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks,
I was just always under the wrong impression. Thank you.
All right. Welcome.
Well, we are here to correct wrong impressions. 1-800-348-2551. Interesting, though, is are there different symptoms or different types of epilepsy for different causes of it, or do a lot of causes get you to the same place?
Both.
Kind of both, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'm
yeah.
glad we cleared that up.
A lot of overlap.
Okay.
1-800-348-2551.
Royal is in Troy. Royal, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi.
I just had a quick question. My wife was actually diagnosed with generalized seizures at 16, and we've gone through the whole process. She's had an ambulatory EEG, which not sure if it's the right region, but the doctor said they were generalized in the L7 region, which I'm not sure exactly what that is. And we had talked about the surgery options, and the neurologist was like, well, surgery is an option, but it is not guaranteed to make it any better, and there have been studies where it has made it worse. Is that true, or is he just trying to keep us away from the surgery option?
Well, I can tell you, for any operation we do for epilepsy, there's never a guarantee of curing the seizures. So, you know, the best we do for certain epilepsies, certain locations, is somewhere along 80 to 90%. But there's never, it's hard to say 100% cure ever happens. You get the highest cure rate if there's a lesion there, like a tumor or a cavernous malformation. You also get high cure rates, or not cure rates, but high success rates when there is what's called mesial temporal sclerosis, so a more common thing in adults than kids. But even in the best situation, there's never 100% guarantee that you'll cure the epilepsy. One, because you may not get all the tissue that's the problem, or two, there may be a new site that kind of pops up after the initial site is removed. So it's really...
Right, the new scar tissue.
Right, new scar or even a new separate spot that the old spot was kind of keeping at bay. Well, that was kind of the biggest epilepsy generator. So there is always a chance it could come back.
All right.
I would say one thing just to kind of put it into perspective is right. For example, some of our best surgical cases might have an 80% cure rate. And you may think, well, that's 20% failure rate, which is absolutely true. The alternative is not to have surgery, to stay on medication, and your cure rate is less than 5%. So that's the other side of the coin you have to look at.
Right.
Okay. Right, and that's another thing that I've been looking at is because she's been on since I met her when she was 19, so she'd only had it for 3 years. And since then, she's been on 4 or 5 different medications, and, like, nothing, I mean, it's slows them down, but it's not completely stopped them. So I want to look into the option of maybe looking at someone who can look at her for the surgery.
Never hurts to look.
Yeah, and if an operation
okay,
is,
now,
is safe,
is that
that's
something
you
guys take
now.
Out-of-state patients?
I leave that up to the hospital. I know we have done, yes, many out-of-state, New Jersey, Vermont, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I'd say talk to your local doctor and see where you can get a referral.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
1-800-348-25. Actually, I shouldn't be giving the phone number because we have very little time left. Let's go for one quick one from Pat in Red Hook. Pat, good afternoon. You have about 30 seconds.
Hi. My son at the age of 29 suffered several seizures and was put on Keppra. He's been on it for 10 years now with no following seizures. Is there any risk in him trying to go off the medication? And is that ever successful?
There's always risk. You said he started at 29?
Yes.
Usually patients who start having seizures at 29 do not outgrow, and I usually tell people it's like high blood pressure. If you have high blood pressure and your medication is controlling it, fantastic, keep taking your medication. So again, without knowing your son at all, my gut response is, you know, you're well controlled, congratulations, keep taking the medication.
Okay.
And is there any risk from Keppra long-term or over your lifetime?
Not that we know of at this time.
Okay.
And
thank
with
so
that,
much.
We have to go. Thank you so much, doctors. We apologize to the people we left on the line. Support for Medical Monday comes from the Hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-4767 for appointments. Thanks so much, doctors Matthew Adamo and Timothy Lynch from Albany Medical Center. And thanks to Zach Malloy, the engineer, Felicia Burke with answering the calls. Our producer is Patrick Donges. I'm Bob Barrett. And thanks for joining us for Vox Pop. Tomorrow's program, Alan Chartok is back with an open forum. Stay tuned now for a news update.